Melissa, so I've explained that Melissa has left, but she says she's here to accept a job. Does that sound... Yes. Yes, okay. Thanks, Debbie. The receiver had clicked back into place. I just spoke with the editor's PA, and she's going to speak to the editor now and give me a call back. Could you wait over there, please? Alex had shuffled into one of the plush seats in the window and studiously checked her phone. No new text messages. She'd used the screen's reflection to wipe away the grit of makeup that had made its way back under her eyes during the drive. She could hear horns from outside and rolled her eyes. London. After a short time, the receptionist had been back on the phone, her eyes darting between Alex and the security guard.
You need to leave now, the guard had said.
I'm still waiting for someone to have the decency to come and see me, Alex had said, fighting back tears and crossing her arms over the binder in her lap.
Miss, the guard had said, leaning in so his nose nearly touched hers, and without a scrap of kindness. You need to leave now.
But you don't understand, Alex had yelled, as the security guard pulled her arm up like a toddler mid-tantrum. You're making a huge mistake. You all are. God, this is so embarrassing, she'd screeched, as the guard pushed through the doors and deposited her firmly outside. She'd fumbled in her bag for her keys, spotting a small crowd standing around her car, which, she realized, had slightly kissed the barrier at the side of the pedestrian crossing.
Is this your car?
The security guard had asked, eyebrows to the sky.
Well, that's none of your business now, after you've been so rude to me,
Alex had yelled. Tears and snot were smeared into Alex's blusher, and she'd really felt that she deserved the dignity of leaving without further interrogation.
You're hammered, darling. I can smell it from here.
That's when Alex had spotted the traffic warden circling her car and flipping his pad open. His too big puffer jacket and cap had drowned him like a new school uniform. Alex had wiped her face and slinked around to lean on the driver's door.
There's no need for that,
she cooed at the expressionless warden, his high cheekbones, almond eyes, and deep black skin giving nothing away.
How about this? You don't write that out, and I just go on my way. No harm done,
she'd smiled, running her hand down the zip of his jacket. His face had been overrun with horror then. Popping the door handle, Alex had licked her lips.
Why don't I make it worth your while, Why don't you get in the other side, and we go somewhere, and I make it worth your while?
This is entirely inappropriate,
the warden had said in a crisp but shaking voice that gave away his young age.
Don't be a spoilsport, Alex had purred, blowing a slight burp away from the corner of her mouth.
The warden had backed away for a moment, heading over to talk to the security guard, who was shaking his head and staring at the car. Then Alex had done the only thing she could think of and jumped into the driver's seat, jammed the key in the ignition, freed herself from the barrier, and thundered down the bus lane. She'd woken early the next day with absolutely no memory of the journey home. She had still been in her black dress-to-impress dress, her handbag spewing its contents all up the stairs. She'd trodden carefully, making her way outside to inspect her car, barefoot. The dents haunted her until the next drink, a few hours later. She'd drunk the house dry. When she finally came to from that blackout, she'd lost a couple of days and a lot of money. Nauseated and drenched in sweat, she'd started sending pictures to everyone she could think of, only stopping when the nausea got too much and she had to vomit.
Chapter 51. Jacob. 13th of October, 2010. Jacob rested his leg under Amy's hospital bed and leaned back in his chair. He said nothing and didn't pick up her hand. He rubbed his eyes deeply, grinding his knuckles into the sockets until they hurt. He'd accepted a lift from his mother, who believed that he was going for a checkup on his leg and had tried her damnedest to accompany him inside. In the years since he'd left home, the memories had dulled, but now he remembered vividly how his mother had accompanied him everywhere, insisted on being designated driver right up until he left home. It was out of care, protection, but it could feel like hands on his throat at times. She'd been the same with Tom. Probably Simon, too, when he'd been young, although he was often off in their father's car going to the court or on this mission or that. Amy's breathing was so quiet that you had to strain to hear it, like trying to pick up a tiny thread from a thick carpet. Jacob tried to shut the noise of his thoughts out. He looked at Amy, oblivious Amy, her skin almost translucent, her head suspended on the plasticky pillow in the kind of deep sleep Jacob could only daydream about. After languishing in his own arrested development for so many years, how had things unraveled so quickly over the last few weeks? Was this always on the cards? Jacob wondered. It's not like he'd ever really given marriage his all, not if he was brutally honest. He'd always prided himself on being a nice guy, a decent bloke who would do the right thing, put the right people first, and stay loyal to the bitter end. He'd told himself that for years. Would Fiona describe him as a nice guy? Would his child think he was putting the right people first? The more important she should have become, the further down the list of priorities Fiona had slipped. Fiona, who was out there, walking, talking, and living, who was carrying his child and had treated him like the man he is and not the boy he was. He looked at Amy, eyes open and hair freshly brushed. Her skin was as milky and smooth as a child's. No ravages of time played out on this face. Amy was like a doll, like a photograph, a different beauty to Fiona. When Jacob had looked in the mirror after his uncomfortable, propped-up shower that morning, he'd seen some cartoonified old guy emerging through the steam, an approximation of him, saggier, greyer, sadder. When he sat with Amy, he felt 15 again, but if she'd opened her eyes then and there, she wouldn't have recognized him. None of this stuff touched Amy. He could dress it up and say he just knew that she benefited from his visits, that his dogged determination to just keep plodding on was having some positive effect. He had believed that at first, before years passed without any obvious change for the better, whereas his sneaking around and inside-out priorities had held his own life underwater. No wonder Fiona had changed. Fiona had been so cool at first. Not cool in the hip way she tried to be with her band t-shirts and art student hair, but cool in the way she'd never tried to change him. Yes, she pushed for things they didn't need and she was bossy about housework, but she hadn't pushed for him to be anyone but himself and to spend time with her. She'd always wanted to spend time with him. Until now. Jacob took one last long look at the bed and left without sitting in any other cubicles, swinging his crutches as quietly as he could. As promised, his mum was waiting in the car park. No radio on, just sitting and waiting, deep in thought. "That was quick," she said as Jacob popped the passenger door handle. "Yep," he said. "I'm healing fine." Sue started the car, but took her hands back off the wheel and turned to him. "We should pop in to see Fiona while we're here." "I don't think so, Mum." "We love having you to stay, but you've got to sort this out before the baby comes." "I know, Mum." "Jacob, whatever the problem is, it can be overcome. If there are kids involved, you'd be surprised what horrors you can put behind you, but you have to show up." It had been a long time since Jacob had heard his mother talk with anything other than a disappointed acceptance. The disapproval cut him. "You don't understand. I tried to talk to her the other day and she didn't want to know." "You're right. I don't understand. You've got a wonderful woman you loved enough to marry and a precious baby on the way. Nothing is more important than that. I know Fiona is a firecracker at the moment, but she's heavily pregnant, not to mention tired, hormonal, and in need of support. Even, Jacob, look at me. Even if she says she doesn't need you, she does, and you need to be there when she realizes that. Darling, nothing is unfixable. You just need to be a man about this." After a stunned silence, Jacob said carefully, "I guess we could see if she's in. Right now, she doesn't want to know me. And I said some things I didn't mean that haven't helped. But I should try to talk to her again. You're right." "For goodness sake, Jacob, stop being so wishy-washy. You have a baby to think about. It's not about whether you make each other happy. It's about putting things right for your child." "Let me call her first. She hates people turning up unannounced." "You're not people. You're her husband, and it's your house, too. Problems need fixing by hook or by crook. It sounds like you're putting this off because it's hard." "You have to let me do things my way, Mum." "Apparently so. Fiona, I'm just round the corner, and we really need to talk." "No, I can't handle this right now." Jacob cupped his hand around the phone, wishing he'd hobbled out of the car to make the call. "Look, we both said some things we didn't mean. I meant them. I wish I hadn't, but I did." "Well, I meant them too, at the time."
"Did you just phone up to start a row with me?"
"No, that's not what I want at all. Look, let me come round and let's just talk. We really need to get everything out in the open. I know I've not been open enough with you." Jacob side-eyed his mother and stopped talking.
"You haven't been remotely open with me, Jay. I think the first honest thing you said to me was that you wanted to break up."
"That's not what I said."
"Well, that's what I heard. So what's the problem? You thought you had somewhere to go, but she's turned you down?"
"No!" Jacob turned awkwardly in the passenger seat to face out of the window. "For the millionth time, I'm not having an affair!"
He lowered his voice. "I've never cheated on you. I never would."
As he spoke, his mother unbuckled her seatbelt and opened the door to get out.
"I'll be out here," she said, as Jacob cringed.
"Who was that? Are you there with her?"
"It was just Mum."
"Your mother was listening to this? What the fuck is wrong with you lot?
She gave me a lift and we were in the car. She wasn't really listening."
"Have you heard yourself, Jacob?" Fiona sighed. "We do have things to sort out. We have the baby to make arrangements for. There's house stuff to talk through and things like maintenance money. I'll talk about that with you. But until you're ready to tell me the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the bloody truth, you don't get to talk to me about anything else."
Jacob waved for his mum to get back in the car.
"It didn't go well," he said, without looking up.
"You just have to keep trying. Jacob, if you only knew the problems I've had to fix in my time. This is nothing."
"Problems with Dad?"
"Nothing you need to worry about. Just believe me that when you become a parent, you need to be willing to confront anything, to clean up any mess, and keep on smiling while you do it."
Sue started the car again. "Mum, could you drop me at a friend's house? It's just around the corner."
"Which friend?"
"A woman called Alex. We're helping each other with something."
"Oh, Jacob, don't tell me Fiona's right."
"No, Mum." Jacob frowned. "I'd never cheat on Fiona. I'd never cheat on anyone. I just need to put some old stuff to bed that needs to be put to bed."
"I don't know what you're talking about, but I can tell you this. No good comes from wallowing in the past.
You need to accept that what's happened has happened, box it up, bury it, and don't look back.
Chapter 52. Alex. 13th of October, 2010. A sharp knock came at the front door.
Oh, hi, Alex said.
Hi. Come in, let me help you. I'm sorry to come here like this, but I don't know what to do. Everything's a mess.
Has something happened?
Nothing new. My wife thinks I'm having an affair and I can't bear being in Edenbridge.
I'm sorry, Alex said, patting Jacob's arm uneasily.
I thought that perhaps I might be able to help you some more while I still have a couple of days off work, Jacob added. Maybe I could work some of this stuff out and then, I don't know, put it to bed and move on. I need to come clean to Fiona and I need to be fully hers. Fully present, she calls it. To be fully there for Fiona, I need to say goodbye to Amy, but I can't when I still don't have any answers. I know I can't, because I've tried and failed before. Alex helped him into the living room. My baby's due soon. I can't be separated from my wife. That's not how this is supposed to go, no matter how badly we're getting on.
How long does she have left?
It really could be any day now.
Alex tried to forget the smile that had spread across Matt's face as he digested what she'd told him.
We're going to have a baby,
he'd said, eyes wide.
Really?
Yes, really, she'd nodded, smiling with relief at his reaction. He'd grabbed her hands in his, stared wide-eyed at her, and drank in the news. Good news, finally. Weeks after losing her mother. And he'd squeezed her, wringing out every drop of what she'd just told him, a secret she'd held for many weeks. Then she'd handed him a glass of champagne, offered her own glass to toast.
It's fine in moderation, she'd protested. The French...
You're not fucking French, Alex.
She really did scale it back then. To moderation. Or somewhere near. Maybe Matt's new baby had been born already. She'd tried not to think about it and hadn't asked. Babies stopped things dead.
I was going to call you later anyway, Alex told Jacob.
She'd been mulling over whether to share her concerns about Paul with him. In many ways, it was too soon. It was just a theory and not a watertight one. But it didn't feel right withholding anything, and Paul had originally crossed her desk because of Jacob. Alex waited for him to settle, a look of disquiet creeping through his face. She wished she could offer him a drink and throw one back herself, but she only had a few servings on the plan for the day. And not for many, many hours yet.
What is it? You're worrying me.
Alex took a deep breath.
It might be nothing, but some stuff has come to light, and there's a slim chance we might know who did it and why.
Shit. Really?
Yeah, maybe. It's only a maybe.
Who?
Jacob stared expectantly. Paul. Paul Wheeler.
Paul Wheeler?
Jacob sat back for a moment, then sprang forward in his seat.
Seriously, you really think he's capable of that? Why? You didn't think that the other day.
Jacob looked absolutely horrified. Sweat collected on his temples and his eyes were wild. Alex wondered how on earth to tell him the possible motive.
Chapter 53. Amy. Sometime in 2010. I had the dream again. I don't think it can technically be called a nightmare because it starts so nicely, but it is nightmarish by the end. In the dream, it's finally happening. I'm lying flat on my back and I'm trying to remember the bit in Forever by Judy Blume where Catherine has sex with Michael for the first time. He's done it before, but she hasn't. And I'm trying to remember the details and how she got through it, but I can't because all I can think about is how much it hurts. I can't feel any other part of my body except where it hurts, and the pain is radiating through the rest of me with every heartbeat. In the dream, he seems to get heavier with every move of his hips, and he doesn't seem to notice, or maybe he doesn't care, that I'm holding my breath and screwing my eyes shut. I knew it would hurt because we're told it will hurt, just like you know it will hurt when you have a baby because your mum still complains about it years later. But I'm sure that when I actually have a baby, it'll still be a surprise and I'll probably yell at everyone, including my mum. The pain of him blinds me, right through the dream and out the other side. And I'm thinking about how you see pictures in Moore magazine of women wrapped around men, sitting on chairs to do it or throwing their hips around without a care in the world, no grimace on their face. But all I can do is lie frozen and try not to cry. I can't imagine this ever being easy, never mind feeling nice. I can't picture myself ever becoming a Moore magazine woman. Even in the dream, I feel sad knowing that the story I'll tell my best friends about this will be full of lies, if I even tell them. And if I don't, I can't bask in the glory of getting there first, which sounds pathetic and is pathetic, but it's also true. And as soon as it's over, every single time I have this dream, I realize I've made some kind of mistake. Sometimes I'm in the wrong place. Other times I realize I'm running late for something really important. Or there's someone else there. One time I dreamed that my mum was calling me from outside the door. This time there was someone else actually in the room, a woman. I don't know who she was, but she was saying things like, "It's not your fault, Amy. It's not your fault he changed." Things like that. And I was trying to whisper to her to get out before he sees her, but she wasn't listening. Before I realized it, I was screaming and she was screaming and then everything went black. When I woke up this time, the dream was still hanging around me, caught in my sheets and in my hair. I could feel the echo of the sting, the weight of him on my chest. I could almost smell his breath in my ear as it turned to wet drips of condensation. That's it now. I'm never going to shake these dreams and how realistic they are. Robbed of the real thing by a stupid dream. It doesn't matter that it didn't really happen because my body, my brain, and now my memory all think otherwise. It's so unfair that I start to cry, but no sound comes out.
Chapter 54. Jacob. 13th of October, 2010. Jacob was in the passenger seat, pushed as far back as possible to give his legs space as Alex drove him back to Edenbridge. He'd barely spoken for the last 20 minutes, while Alex had barely stopped. His girlfriend, his sweet, fun, normal girlfriend, sleeping with her own father. No, there was just no way. Alex's latest idea was plain wrong. Not necessarily wrong about Paul Wheeler hurting Amy, he could well believe that, but way off-piste about the rest. She had to be. "What happens next?" he interrupted. "Are you going to the police about this?" "Not formally, no. Not at this stage, anyway. It's such a serious crime to accuse someone of, and, like I've said a few times..." Alex looked at him briefly. "It's just a theory. One of several." Jacob nodded and looked dead straight at the road. "I've asked Matt to look into it to see if there's anything more on Paul's record that might be relevant."
"Okay."
Jacob ground his teeth as he watched his hometown creep into the windscreen and along the sides of the car. Amy's stepfamily setup had always been a bit alien to him. He knew it was one of the many things that his mum looked down on about the Stevensons, even if she'd never openly admitted it. In his mum's world, marriage was forever. No matter what. It wouldn't have mattered what his own dad had done or not done. Jacob knew full well the Arlingtons would have remained resolutely together to the bitter end. He wondered what his parents really made of his own predicament. How far down the line from fracture to permanent break did they think he and Fiona were? How far down the line were they, for that matter? Would someone else end up as weekday dad to his child? He shuddered with a bolt of unexpected anger. Alex's black polo had just passed Edenbridge Town Station when her phone rang in its cradle. Jacob watched her fumble to answer it on loudspeaker. She seemed almost ditzy, which was new to him. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Alex. Can you talk?
Jacob looked at Alex, who looked at the phone. I have someone in the car with me at the moment, she said. Silence from the other end. Hang on, she added. I'll pull over and get out.
Chapter 55. Alex. 13th of October, 2010. Alex pulled into the station's overflow car park and swung across two spaces. She yanked the phone from the cradle, crushing it to her ear as she climbed out of the idling car. Hey, what's up?
Well, I have something concrete, but you might not like it.
Oh?
Paul Wheeler didn't do it, Alex.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am.
Matt had perfected the policeman's monotone delivery, Alex realized. Good news, bad news, the same flattened voice announced it. Even to her. Maybe especially to her. Did he speak to Jane in the same low rumble? Alex didn't remember his soft voice sounding so toneless before. And she thought she remembered everything. You sound very certain.
I'm totally certain, because he was in prison at the time.
You're kidding me. But he said he'd been...
I'm sorry, Alex. It looks like he was puffing up his involvement for some reason. But he couldn't have been anywhere near the school when he said he was.
What was he in prison for?
Shoplifting.
Seriously?
Yep. He'd been caught for it a couple of times already, so he got 3 months. He went in a couple of days before your girl went missing.
Shoplifting. Alex shook her head. On some level, it was a relief. The idea of Paul and Amy locked in some kind of doomed love affair was repulsive at best. But that didn't make Amy any less attacked then, or any less alone now. Despite her reservations about Paul being the culprit, it still felt like a setback. Of all the pathetic things, Matt. God. Matt's voice in her ear offered little in the way of consolation.
I'm sorry, Al.
Al. She hadn't been called that in years, and it knotted her chest. Well, thank you anyway. I appreciate you taking the time to look, she said, in an echo of his emotionless tone. Matt paused. She could hear him breathe heavily.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's not like I wanted it to be him. I just wish I was a little closer to some kind of resolution, she said, giving more away than she'd hoped. For Amy, I mean.
Don't give up, will you?
Of course not, she said, pursing her lips. I told you, I'm dead set on finishing what I started.
I'm glad to hear that.
For a moment, it sounded like he had more to add, but after a few seconds, he said, Take care. Thanks, and you. Fuck. She propped herself on the bonnet and sighed. That rotten, slimy bastard had been willing to string her along for a few quid, just to blag some cash for an interview full of lies. Selling out Amy's memory when he'd never given her anything. Bob was right not to want him in Amy's life. Bloody Paul Wheeler. She needed to get Jacob home, and then back to her kitchen. Her story still had no conclusion. She was kicking up dirt and getting nowhere. What on earth was she thinking, really? A lifestyle journalist, whose recent idea of research was a hasty Wikipedia search or copying and pasting from a press release. Even as a columnist, the details were extracted from the depths of her head, just memories or observations. You couldn't get those wrong. She looked across at Jacob in the passenger seat, who was clearly nervous about what she might have just been told. It wasn't Paul after all.
Is it wrong to be glad?
He asked. She shook her head. Not even slightly. But it does mean there's more work to be done.
Chapter 56. Amy. Sometime in 2010. There's a woman here. She's introduced herself as Alex, and I think she might think I'm someone else, although she knows my name is Amy. Maybe there's another Amy here, wherever here is. I don't put her straight, I just bite my tongue because it's nice to have a visitor. I hope other Amy isn't missing out too much because of me. I know it's selfish, but I'm just so lonely. The days and weeks are blending into a wide black sea, and it's rare that I see land. And the land I glimpse doesn't really satisfy me. I miss my mum. I know it's been a long while since I saw her or Bob, but I can't let myself dwell on that. I tell myself that their work is in the way, but something in the pit of my tummy knows it's worse than that. I let it stay there. I feel weak and scared right now, so I'd rather be lied to than told a difficult truth. Alex's voice sounds familiar, like I've heard it years ago, or maybe she sounds like one of my mum's friends or the ladies she works with in the shop. It sounds like a posher version of my voice. It's soft and quiet, but you know that she really means everything she says, like she's planned each word and that they all matter. I like people who are decisive and know what they want to say or do. That's how I want to be. She's a journalist too. I mean, I'm not yet, but I want to be. And at one time, she must have wanted to be, and now she is. Sometimes it works out that way. Maybe it'll work out that way for me. Maybe if Alex keeps coming back to see me, she could help me get what I want. I'd work for it. I'd tell her how hard I'd work for it. In the background, while Alex talks, I can hear music. It sounds like Oasis, but it's not a song I know. There's been talk of a new album for a while. Liam Gallagher is singing about a Wonderwall and about being saved. Alex says she likes it, but I'm too into Blur to admit that I quite like the sound of it too. It lulls me like a nursery rhyme and I start to feel sleepy again. When I wake up, she's gone. For a minute, I'm not sure if I dreamed her up all along until another voice, the one that sings like my mum, mentions me having a visitor. It's nice to have a new friend, isn't it? She says, but I don't reply. The lyrics I heard earlier with Alex keep drifting back to me in snatches as the other woman washes my face. I hope Alex comes back.
Chapter 57. Jacob. 14th of October, 2010.
Hi, Alex.
Jacob answered foggily, holding his phone loosely to his ear. His other hand covered his scrunched-up eyes. Did I wake you? Her voice sounded distant and watery.
No, well, yeah, you did, but it's fine. I need to get used to early mornings again. What's up?
I guess now that Paul is ruled out, I wanted to look at what's left to explore, Alex said, her voice without any of the adrenaline of the previous day.
I guess there's nothing else you can do.
Jacob always felt uneasy when Alex took pains to explain her process to him.
Right. Well, Paul may have lied about his own timeline with Amy, but that doesn't mean he lied about everything. There's still the claim that he saw her with another guy one time.
Jacob was silent for a few beats. He didn't want to give this thought any oxygen. He sat up slowly and blinked a couple of times. A tattied toy box caught his eye, and he felt a sudden pang of nostalgia. He half expected to hear a Game Boy through the wall, or even the awful, depressive music Tom had turned to in his teens.
I don't buy it.
I know you don't, and I know it's hard for you to even consider, but knowing that Amy probably had consensual...
Jacob cut her off. Please, I don't need to hear this again.
Sorry, it's just... If there was someone else... Alex asked carefully. Who would she have told?
Probably Jenny.
Jenny threatened to have me arrested when I tried to talk to her.
That doesn't surprise me, Jacob said.
When was the last time you saw Jenny?
My last day at school, 15 years ago.
Did you get on?
We got on okay, I guess. She was quite brash and full on, not my kind of person, but she was a decent enough girl. I think she was quite a good friend to Amy. So, if you were to, say, call her up out of the blue, how do you think she'd react? Oh, God, I can see where this is going.
Jacob had expected some reticence, so Jenny's eagerness to meet him had made him uneasy all over again. On the phone, she'd offered to meet first thing the next day, and he'd felt his bravado instantly seep away. Now Jacob sat squirming in the back of a cafe, tucked disconcertingly around the corner from their old school. The cafe door swung inwards, and the first thing Jacob noticed was how big Jenny was. Not just chubby or overweight, she was really very fat. Jacob could clearly see the familiar face, but it was floating on a much larger face. She had thick fingers, a gold ring cutting deeply into one of them, and she looked far older than 30. They hugged an awkward, squashy hello after she made her way over.
"Don't worry, Jake. I know you're in with that journalist."
Jacob raised his eyebrows in surprise.
"Come on. I've not heard from you for 15 years, and then just after she tries to pull a number on me, you get in touch. I'm not daft."
"You're right. But I think you've got her a bit wrong."
"Well, whatever. I'm not interested in her. How are you?"
"I'm okay, thanks. I'm married now and expecting my first baby any day. How are you?"
"It's okay, Jake. I'm not going to try it on with you. You're safe."
Jacob smiled and immediately worried about the depth of relief he'd shown.
"I'm loved up too, and we have a little girl," Jenny said.
"Well, congratulations to you both. How old is she?"
"She's 3.
"Oh, lovely. Not long until school then. What's her name?"
"She's due to start next September, yeah. It's flown by."
Jenny hesitated.
"And, she's called Amy."
Jacob stirred his tea without looking up. Eventually, he complimented her on the choice of name.
"My partner suggested it. He knows all about our Amy, obviously. I wasn't sure at first, but it really suits her."
"It's nice that you could do that," Jacob swallowed. "Jenny, I know you're not impressed by Alex's methods, but she's beginning to get somewhere. She's starting to find answers, and I know I've still got lots of questions, haven't you?"
"You need to be careful with journalists, Jake, and she's a sneaky one."
Jacob frowned. "Look, I don't like saying this, but Alex thinks that maybe Amy, he cleared his throat, that Amy might have been seeing someone else before she went missing and it turned sour. Do you know anything about that?" Jenny opened her mouth to say something, but looked down.
"I'm really sorry," she said. "That journalist told you about the virginity thing, didn't she? I'm so sorry. It really wasn't..."
"What virginity thing?" Jacob heard his heartbeat over his voice. Jenny's eyes searched his face.
"It was just stupid. I mean, I didn't think she'd take it seriously. I didn't even consider it at the time."
"Jenny?" Jacob lowered his voice and stared into her eyes, which were filling with tears. "You're really freaking me out. Can you please tell me what you're talking about?" Jenny exhaled and sucked her lips in for a moment as if she had completely deflated.
"God. Okay, so me, Amy and Becky had this stupid game going to see who could lose their virginity first."
"Amy did?"
"Yeah, all 3 of us did. It was just a bit of fun. It was silly. It didn't change anything. I didn't do anything because of it, and I haven't thought Amy took it seriously."
"Hadn't thought?"
"The journalist. She said Amy wasn't a virgin when she was attacked. She said Amy had, you know, done it. I didn't know whether to believe her or not."
"Believe her?" Jacob said quietly.
"Shit. Look, I didn't know. I really didn't know. If I had, I would have told the police.
Told the police what?
About the other bloke.
The walls of the cafe seemed to pulse and loom in as Jacob gripped the table. He felt the blood drain from his head.
I don't want to upset you.
Jesus Christ, Jenny, we're beyond that now. A cold sweat crept up Jacob's neck as Jenny described holding back Amy's hair in the sleeper pub toilets a few weeks before she went missing.
She was pretty pissed, and even when she was throwing up, she was babbling away. At the time, I thought it was just the drink talking, and I wasn't exactly sober either, but, you know, maybe there was more to it.
Jenny looked up and opened her eyes wide.
If I'd known how far it had gone, I'd have told the police. I just didn't think anything of it.
Didn't think anything of what, Jenny? Jacob said impatiently.
She said she was feeling guilty because she was interested in someone else and he was interested in her.
Jacob sat back like he'd been yanked by the hair.
I'm really sorry. She loved you to bits, but she was confused. I asked who it was, but she wouldn't tell me.
You have no idea.
She said that it was someone close to you, and that's why she felt so bad. Please don't look angry. She said nothing had happened, and she never mentioned it again. I should have asked her about it when she was sober, but I didn't.
Why not? Jacob asked, his face clammy. Jenny looked down.
Because I didn't want to know. I didn't like the idea of her doing that to you.
Jacob couldn't feel his legs. He started to fire out every school friend's name he could remember. Jenny blinked away tears and held up her hand.
I don't know. I'm really sorry, Jake.
I don't know what to say. I shouldn't be angry with her now, but that's exactly how I feel.
She loved you, Jake. Whatever else happened, she loved you. I just hope she didn't do anything stupid to win that pathetic bet.
I can't believe she'd be so casual about it. I really thought it mattered to her.
It did, Jake.
No, Jenny, it really fucking didn't. And if you knew how long I waited for her.
I'm so sorry.
So am I.
Chapter 58. Alex. 15th of October, 2010.
I'm going on paternity leave soon, so I don't have much time, Matt said, as Alex's hand shook slightly, holding the phone to her ear.
Paternity leave. It was all so very proper for him this time. So real. Matt announced his upcoming leave in the same police tones that he told her about Paul Wheeler's alibi. When Matt's name had popped up on her phone's screen, she'd almost sent the call to voicemail, embarrassed that she was no further along. But to see that he was calling, to know his fingers had found her name on his phone, that he'd found a place to hide while he spoke to her, had carved a sliver of time just for her, meant she had to answer.
Alex, I know the Paul Wheeler idea was a non-starter, but I remembered you'd asked me to look into similar cases. Do you remember?
Of course I do. I remember everything, Matt. I review our conversations over and over in my head until I feel sick. I finally passed over some of my cases, so I had a chance to look into this yesterday, and I found something that could be relevant.
Oh?
Alex sat down heavily on her sofa, wet running things leaving an instant dark patch. The rain whipped at the old kitchen window. An angry wind whistled down the chimney and knocked at the grate to get in. Could there really be something new? Some gift from Matt to kick things up a notch?
Don't get your hopes up, but it's safer if we talk in person.
Alex sat up straight. I'd love to. How about today? How soon can you meet? She had 2 hours to get ready, drive to the train station, park, and buy a ticket. 2 hours in which to stay out of the kitchen. 2 hours in which to avoid Dutch courage. She looked down. She was still shivering in her wet running tights and hoodie. Her hair was ridged with sweat, and her cheeks were mottled. She scrambled into the shower, rinsing shampoo into her eyes in haste and nicking her leg with the razor. It was lucky the time was so short. Any longer and she may have sat paralyzed, barely able to breathe at the thought of seeing him again. Now, for the first time in years, she would be so close to his skin that she'd smell his aftershave. Perhaps he was grey now. Grey would suit him. Had she had days to worry and panic, she might have ordered 10 or so outfits to try on and discard in tears, sinking more and more red wine to quell the panic and blur the mirror. With half of her clothes in the wash and a quarter of them drying in the warmest corner of the kitchen, she had little choice. She pulled on matching underwear, embarrassed while she selected it. She chose her cleanest jeans and a close-fitting Jack Wills jumper that she hoped was a little more flattering than her other options. She blasted her hair on the highest setting of the hairdryer. Her hands shook as she applied makeup clumsily and then washed it all off again. She would do it on the train when her heart rate was a little closer to the normal range. "You look well," Matt lied. "You look great," Alex replied. He really did look great, and he smelled great too, musky, woody, and luxurious. For a moment, she just stood and drank him in. Matt was wearing his 30s well, relaxed laughter lines around the eyes, the lightest of silver touches to his stubble. He looked well-worn and expensive, like a prized leather Chesterfield. Alex displayed the accoutrements of a good 30. A great bag, expensive makeup, a decent mask. On the plus side, she reasoned, she probably did look markedly better than the last time he saw her. How could she not?
"I don't have long."
Matt clearly didn't feel the need to explain.
"So let's get down to it."
"Sure."
"You first,"
Matt pointed. "Me? Oh, okay. Well, Amy's boyfriend from the time has been helping me."
"Whoa, that's great."
The positive shock on Matt's face was a little too much. "Yes, Matt, I'm not completely useless. I do finish some of the things I start, the important things. Well, you know, some of them."
"How did you find him?"
"He broke into my house." "Journalistic excellence," Matt smiled. The Greenwich coffee shop was surprisingly quiet. Perhaps the clouds had chased the crowds away, or perhaps Matt knew this place as a particularly private rendezvous point. In a corner, a handful of overdressed students tried too hard and laughed too loud, mocking the plastic menus and tomato-shaped sauce bottle, which would have been considered kitsch and cool when Alex and Matt were their age. By the door, a father in crumpled clothes gave up trying to read the ketchup-splattered paper as his twin toddlers rocked back and forth, toast soldiers pulverized by their pudgy palms. Alex told Matt about Jacob. She mentioned Jenny and her rebuttal, that Jacob was talking to her as they spoke. She described the eye strain from combing through hundreds of articles. She whizzed through the field trip to see where Amy was found, the conversations with Becky, and the mad dash to Devon to accost Bob.
"I've got to be honest. You've done more than I thought you would have. No offense."
"That is slightly offensive, Matt." Alex rolled her eyes. It was hard to know if he was being playful or genuinely thought she was useless. Then Matt smiled. Oh God, that smile. The one where the deepest dimples opened up from cheekbone to chin, ready for her to fall in and float away. That smile that used to be hers whenever she took the time to tease it out. Now it belonged to Jane, who was 38 weeks and 4 days, not long now, and thought he was doing overtime and I feel shitty about it, so...
"Look, like I said, I don't want to get your hopes up, but there is something I found, and it doesn't sit easily with me. It's just too close to ignore."
"What is it, Matt?" Alex felt her heart race, and she tried not to look too eager. In early July 1995, a very drunk 16-year-old girl was chatted up on a late bus in Edenbridge. The young guy talking to her convinced her to get off at the edge of town and, well, you and I would say he raped her. Who wouldn't say that?
There are some grey areas in the case file. She got off the bus with him willingly. She was intending to sleep with the guy. We deal with it very differently now. Who was the guy? He was never tracked down, but going from a statement, he was somewhere between mid-teens and mid-thirties, which isn't very helpful, but perhaps shows just how pissed she was. He was at least 6 foot, with dark hair and a deep voice. Hang on, is this off the record? If it needs to be. Don't give this to your editor or anything. Not yet. I won't, Matt. What is it? She wanted to grab his jacket and shake him along. He said his name was Graham. Graham. Alex rolled the name around on her tongue and wrote it down in her notepad. It didn't mean anything to her. So this Graham chats the girl up and convinces her to get off the bus, share the bottle he had, have some fun on the common. Okay, all sounds very sleazy. It was. Like I said, she was drunk and she changed her mind and asked him to walk her home instead. He didn't let her go. He tied her hands up and had sex with her. Raped her, corrected Alex. Yeah. Her statement says he put his hands on her throat afterwards and threatened to kill her.
That's awful, Alex said angrily. And no one's ever been done for it.
There wasn't a lot to go on, Matt said defensively. It definitely feels connected. What do you think? Well, it's not a million miles off what happened to Amy. Don't get too excited, though, Alex. At the time, she was seen as a flaky witness due to her circumstances.
What circumstances?
Matt exhaled. She had a difficult background, and given how pissed she was at the time, the case probably wouldn't have been brought by the CPS even if they'd had a suspect.
So, despite someone who was basically a kid being brave enough to come forward to give a statement, this guy was allowed to carry on and probably get worse, possibly go on to attack Amy.
Tread carefully, Alex. This isn't a case of us letting a bad guy slip the net. The case wouldn't have held up.
Matt, I'm not out for police blood. I couldn't give a crap about that. I'm just trying to look at anything that might help Amy.
Okay, but just remember that this is off the record, and you definitely didn't get it from me.
How realistic is it to ask if I can talk to the girl that reported the rape?
Matt cocked his head, raised his eyebrows, and said nothing.
Absolutely out of the question?
Alex helped. Yep. There is literally no way that I can pass a victim's name on to a member of the press for no reason.
And I guess you can't get in touch with her?
I really can't, Alex. I know that's not what you want to hear, but how could I justify it?
Because I want you to?
They both smiled. Alex, if you bring me a reason to open this up again, then I can pass it on. But it would need to be really solid, more than just a hunch. I know it sounds uptight, but you remember how it is.
I remember everything, Matt.
I know.
I miss you, she whispered.
I have to go.
I know you do. Graham. It was a pseudonym, of course. No one who plans a sex attack blurts out their real name during the preamble. This tall, dark young man calling himself Graham had to be Amy's attacker. From what little Matt had shared, the man sounded entirely in control. He must have planned things, or at least had a plan ready to go for whenever he spotted a potential victim. That must be something that takes years to work towards, thought Alex. There must have been some baby steps along the way. Or maybe he was guided by someone else. Alex had been on the brink of giving up and sinking into a deep red several hours early and several glasses too many. And now, Matt, of all people, had placed her slap bang back on track. She had a name. She had a similar case, just weeks before Amy was abducted. She had a story. She really had a story. She was so excited that until the train pulled into Tunbridge Wells station, she thought solely about Amy and didn't dwell on the way Matt's scent lingered on her clothes and how beautifully his eyes still danced over her face when she spoke.
Chapter 59. Amy. Sometime in 2010. Alex came to see me again today, and it wasn't as nice as the other times. I must have been dozing when she got here, and I missed the first part of what she was saying, so all I heard was some pretty weird stuff. I don't know if this was because she